Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going? And are you going to see Disclosure Day on the midnight release like I am on this upcoming Thursday?
I will not be, I've seen a lot of hype about that movie, and I know you're super excited about it. So yeah, I'll have to see it at some point. Maybe not this weekend, maybe next weekend. Once it, you know, I almost try to always, it depends on what the movie is. It has to be something really like I'm really amped up about to go see it, like when it's going to be a packed theater. So usually I'll try to be patient, you know, hold off like a week or two, but yeah, we'll see. Definitely intrigued by that movie.
Yeah, the first time I saw the trailer for it, it was like my mind was blown. I mean, not just because it's like, you know, Spielberg is great at doing those alien movies, space movies and stuff, or that it's like his first film in a while, but it's more so that I think this is like, you know, predictive programming or, you know, conditioning the public for ultimate disclosure at some point. And I think I think Spielberg's like, he's high enough up in Hollywood that he's probably knows some secrets that the public is not privy to. So I think there's probably going to be a lot of truth in that movie. I also just think regardless of all of that stuff, which is why I want to see it, regardless, it's going to be a good film because Spielberg's such a great director.
Yeah, especially like this being his first movie in a while.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's definitely going to be a good one.
Yeah, I am pumped, but I'm also pumped to talk about some relief pitchers around MLB. We are back for episode number 164, and as always, we're going to discuss the news and notes from the past week, talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks, and then we're going to look at some of the best bullpens in baseball right now, mostly looking at the top three arms in each of those bullpens. So we'll see how the bullpens rank between me and Rick. We both rank them differently, so we'll get into that at the latter half of the show. But let's start off with the transactions from the past week. Not a lot of significant stuff, definitely not really a lot of fantasy relevant stuff, so we'll run through this section pretty quickly, but we want to cover everything, make sure our listeners are fully tapped in to the world of relief pitchers. Let's start with Joe LaSorsa, who was traded by the Pirates to the Red Sox in exchange for cash considerations. He spent, I think, a day or two with the Red Sox before being optioned to the minors. They also sent Tyler Samaniego to the minors and selected the contract of veteran righty Tommy Canley. So a little bit of moving and shaking in that Red Sox bullpen, but do you see anything that's could become fantasy relevant in like people's leagues?
Not really. I mean, I'm kind of, Giovanni Moran, injury hurt, LaSorsa, Samaniego. I mean, Tommy Canley at this point, I'm not really in on. Alec Gamboa, I've seen him throw six pitches. Like I'm somewhat intrigued. I want to see more. I don't know how long he's going to be up for. But yeah, it's the back more than half of that Red Sox bullpen is headache right now that I'm trying to figure out who, you know, behind Chapman, Whitlock and Slayton, like who's the fourth guy there? Who's the fifth guy? Cause that could sometimes, you know, factor into holds every now and then. So probably not on the Red Sox, but none of those guys really are intriguing. LaSorsa and Samaniego are not too different, just like, you know, you're kind of up and down left-handed relief options. Mm-hmm. Nothing special.
Yeah, you mentioned Giovanni Moran hitting the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation and Alec Gamboa being recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. He made a brief debut earlier this season, and he's been back now for his second stint in the majors. He has a decent fastball, so we'll see if he can parlay that fastball-slider combination into success in a Red Sox bullpen that you mentioned has some openings there in the top or back end or front end of the bullpen, we'll say. It's hard to tell when you're going front and back with the relievers.
I think it's front. I used to get like front court and back court mixed up in basketball all the time.
Depends on the direction.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But I think front end would be the worse relievers that aren't pitching in high leverage. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. All right. Another trade we have was Kyle Nicholas being traded by the Reds to the Orioles in exchange for cash considerations. Eduardiel Nunez was designated for assignment in a corresponding move and was ultimately claimed off waivers by the Cubs. We've seen Nicholas show some potential. He doesn't stay healthy. He doesn't throw strikes, but maybe the Orioles can help him figure that out. They've done a pretty decent job at developing relievers over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I mean, Nicholas is an interesting, he's shown flashes, especially, I forget, who did he pitch for in the World Baseball Classic, but he had some, he's a good outing or two there, and then maybe Canada, I don't know. But
that's what I would guess.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting arm who just has never,
Italy.
I mean, it's Italy, okay, that makes, yeah, that was my second guess. Just the command has never quite been there for him. But the stuff is crazy. It's, you know, really good fastball, good breaker. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Baltimore always is kind of taking chances on these types. Sometimes it works out. Their bullpen could use some help at this point. So, you know, we'll see. I thought, you know, Eduardiel Nunez is kind of in the same boat where it's, you know, crazy stuff, bad command. I haven't really seen what he's been doing in the minors or anywhere this year. I'm guessing it hasn't been great, but still, like, you know, you can't teach 99 plus miles per hour, and that's, you know, what Nunez possesses. So Cubs is a potentially good landing spot since their front half of their bullpen is also kind of up in the air at this point. So, yeah, maybe we see one of those two in the next couple weeks.
Nunez has not been great in the minor league. 7.13 ERA between AA and AAA. What do you think his walk rate is?
18%.
Oh, 20% walk rate from Eduardiel Nunez.
He's
in the
still
minor
really
leagues
young.
This year.
Well, he's 27. I mean, yeah, so like there's
potential.
Not totally out. Yeah, but
yeah. Somebody else who has potential is a new call up for the Angels. Sammy Natera Jr. was selected from the minors. He's a 26-year-old southpaw, and he pitched to a 3 ERA with a 34% strikeout rate at AAA. That does come with a 14% walk rate, but I think given that he throws 95 from the left side and the Angels bullpen sort of lacks that potential in that bullpen, especially from the left side, he's certainly interesting. So, I mean, any additional thoughts on Sammy Natera Jr.?
He intrigues me. I like what I saw from his first, I don't know, his first two outings so far. He does have a good fastball. And like from the left side, like it's Pomeranz and Suter and I don't even know if Aldegary is up and he is up right now. He's like up and down. So yeah. And I mean, Natera should be, they should give him a long look. Especially, I mean, I think we know the Angels are going to, I should say we know the Angels are going to sell, but who knows with them.
But remember last year?
I know, or whatever that, yeah, I mean, the last couple of years it's been.
Well, last year they went out and they got Luis Garcia and Andrew Chafin.
Was that last year?
Yeah. And it made no sense.
And then the year with Ohtani when they went out and got Giolito. And yeah.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, I would think Pomeranz and Suter aren't, at least one of those guys is not going to be around the rest of the year. So yeah, Natera should have a spot on that roster, and definitely not a lot of upside in that roster outside of Sam Bachman. So
he's been looking good.
Yeah. So I think they could have something there with Bachman and Natera, and maybe Zephyr John, Zephyr John's such a roller coaster, but when he's on, he's really good.
Right. Or maybe Ben Joyce will pitch in the majors again someday.
Who knows? I'm not holding my breath. Yeah.
The A's got some reinforcements from the minors in Elvis Alvarado. He was one of the best relievers last year, but he struggled to open the season this year, got sent to the minors. And it was a lot of control that was holding Alvarado back, but he locked it in at AAA with a 2.16 ERA and a 43-3% strikeout to walk ratio. He struck out nearly 44% of batters, walked just 3% of batters in his final 9 games. That was one walk in 9 games after he was like nearing 20% with his walk rate. So he definitely figured something out. And to show just how much they believe in Alvarado. They even DFA'd Joel Kunal, who had gotten a handful of saves for the A's. He was ultimately traded to the Brewers in exchange for cash consideration. So Kunal headed to the Brewers, Alvarado back in the A's bullpen. And I wouldn't be surprised if he can find his way into that closer committee if he can carry over what he was doing at AAA.
Yeah, I'm very interested in Alvarado, especially, yeah, that command is great. And also, he didn't have a slider at the beginning of the year. He's like completely abandoned it. And his first game back, at least he had that like really good slider back again. So he's got the slider, he's got the fastball, he's got better command, splitter too. I mean, yeah, if his command is, I mean, it doesn't even have to be 3%, but if it's under 10% of his stuff, that definitely puts him in the mix for high leverage innings, whatever is going on in the back end of that bullpen. But did you happen to see Joel Kunal's debut with the Brewers? Please tell me.
No.
Oh no.
What happened?
He was throwing 100 miles per hour all of a sudden.
No, he was not.
Yeah.
So, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, dude, it's
the same guy.
Joel Kunal, and there's obviously a little bit of a revenge game factor, but still,
he was throwing 94 before.
He was throwing.
What do you mean 100?
He threw 100. His top velocity was like 100-point-something yesterday.
No, you're right. I'm looking right now. Everything was up 5 miles per hour. That's insane. The Brewers have got, they've got some explaining to do, whatever.
That's my whole Twitter feed has been like, the Brewers need to be investigated because what
is
this?
Crazy. Yeah. Whatever labs they got back, because it's not like he's 31 and he's all of a sudden he's throwing 100 miles per hour. Has he ever done that
shows
before?
Up 2 days later, he's throwing 100.
Yeah. The top he's averaged is 96 with his fastball. He averaged in his last outing 99 with his sinker. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
I can't. I mean, I don't even know what to do with that information because, like, I don't believe it.
You're gonna have to.
If it happens again, yeah. I mean, I want to see him get out of. I don't know. Maybe it's that whole Vegas. Everything that happened in the game last night just doesn't make any sense.
Could it be explained by Vegas? Is that just maybe like the Brewers, the radars are wrong?
Brewers in general were up pretty much a lot, but not like 5 miles per hour.
5 miles per hour is crazy.
But and maybe he was at, too. Yeah, maybe it was like 97. I could see 3 miles per hour because he's facing the team that just got rid of him.
Yeah,
like, I see that type of thing kind of happen every now and then, but. Yeah, five is ridiculous.
That's crazy.
Honestly. And then he threw the one slider that was down 2.3 miles per hour. He got a swing and miss on it. But I don't know if he's throwing 99 with the Brewers, like all of a sudden he's going to be that's a big time addition for the Brewers that they got for free. So I don't know. It's, I guess, something to keep an eye on with Kunal. But I can't imagine once they get away from playing the A's, he's still throwing 99.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. Thank you for telling me. That's blew my mind. All right, let's move on to some IL activations. Tommy Nance was activated from the 15-day IL after missing time with forearm discomfort. Yariel Rodriguez was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. I mean, they keep yanking that guy's chain so much. I mean, they chose Simeon Woods Richardson and Connor Siebold over Yariel Rodriguez. I hope he figures it out with another club because I don't know. I've been rooting for him ever since he pitched in the WBC the last time. He looked pretty solid, but I don't expect him to be, you know, a dominant reliever, but he could be a decent swingman somewhere.
Yeah, that's probably, and that's what like Siebold and Woods Richardson are too. I mean, it's like they're all kind of the same guy. But yeah, probably, I mean, at this point, he probably needs to change of scenery, have, you know, another team's pitching development staff look at him, see if they can figure something around. Could be a good fit, yeah. I mean, Brewers, I mean, if they're making Joel Kunal throw 100, I mean, what would they do with Yariel Rodriguez?
Right.
So, yeah, I'm sure he'll find a spot somewhere. Maybe not an MLB. Maybe not an MLB roster spot, but yeah. I mean, Tommy Nance is one of the most underrated relievers in baseball, too. I know he's really deep in that depth chart because the Blue Jays, when they're healthy, like very – it's hard to get holes from some of these guys like Fisher, Nance, Flaherty. But Nance has two really good breaking balls that he's kind of similar to Fisher in that way, where it's like the breaking balls are the primaries and he works off that. But yeah, I mean, Nance is a good addition for them. And they got, you know, Jimmy Garcia might be back next week too. So they're almost at full strength.
Yeah, no, I got that in the news section. Garcia made his second rehab appearance last weekend as he recovers from arthroscopic elbow surgery. So Garcia could be back this upcoming weekend, and that Blue Jays bullpen would be in the conversation for one of the best overall bullpens.
One through seven, eight, yeah. And they optioned Adam Macko today, who I thought was pretty good too. I feel like that's a really solid lefty. They're pretty stacked with bullpen options there. We knew that. Yeah. We talked about that, though. Yeah, it's just really deep. Yeah,
I think they're just in a position where Miles, Siebold, and Woods Richardson all don't have options left.
Yeah, exactly.
So you got to hold them all.
Get rid of Siebold, but yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, makes sense. Our next IL activation is Cole Wynn, who's been out with arm fatigue, and he'll rejoin a Rangers bullpen that optioned Luis Cervello to the minors in a corresponding move, and is sort of big for the Rangers. Not necessarily super fantasy relevant, but there's just so few trusted relievers in that Rangers bullpen at the moment that Cole Wynn immediately vaults right back in to being one of the top three or four arms in Texas.
Yeah. I know he did not have the best numbers, but the stuff looked pretty good from him before the IL placement. And, you know, I was hoping for, you know, Luis Cervello or Cervello. I was hoping for more from him, and like his stuff didn't look the same as it did the last time he was up. Just like trying to find Jacob Junis, for what he is, he's been great as like the eighth inning guy. Like that's worked out. You're not going to replace him, but getting the ball to the eighth inning for Junis and Lats has definitely been a struggle. And yeah, they need Wynn and, you know, someone else probably to figure things out so they can, you know, protect those leads. But yeah, I think Wynn's still their best option when healthy. And even when they get, I guess if they get Robert Garcia back, but that, I don't even know. We don't really have any firm updates on him. So yeah, this bullpen's still struggling to find that second setup man, I guess.
Right. A top setup man has returned to the Red Sox as Garrett Whitlock was activated from the 15-day IL after missing time with knee inflammation. I don't think there's much analysis to go here. I think Whitlock will just slot right back into being the top setup man to Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, for now. And then we'll see what the Red Sox do with their bullpen at the deadline. But Whitlock should be so very quick IL stint. I think it was the min or close to the min 15 days. So. Yeah, it seems like everything's fine there. And I think he really just needed some rest because he was a little overworked at the beginning. It's a rough, kind of 2 months for him. But I think, we should see a big second half or second, two thirds of the season. I guess we're not the halfway point yet, but Whitlock should be good moving forward.
Yeah, we are getting there. All right, next we'll look at some injuries. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. Let's talk about some reliever injuries from the last week. We were fortunate to only have a couple of significant injuries. Matt Gage was placed on the 15-day IL with knee inflammation by the Giants. Dylan Smith was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move, and he immediately got a save. So I think Smith is more underrated than a lot of these guys in the Giants bullpen. But Gage was pretty underrated as well. He led the Giants in appearances before this injury, so he was heavily relied upon. That means Eric Miller and Sam Henches will be the top lefties in the Giants bullpen moving forward.
Yeah, Gage, not a lot of upside, but he was a steady presence for them from the left side. Dylan Smith's definitely a name to keep an eye on. We already talked about him a little bit before we got on the air, and I think that Giants bullpen is wide open. Smith got a save and extra innings on Sunday night. Think, stuff wise, he belongs in the high leverage conversation with the Giants. Just depends on what their thoughts, I guess, are on Keaton Wynn and Caleb Killian at this point, which I don't even know what my thoughts are on them because it's just been like, I don't know, highs and lows with both those guys. And I'm starting to kind of sour on both of them a little bit. So hoping Dylan Smith can provide some stability there.
Yeah, let's hope so. Next in St. Louis, Ryan Fernandez was placed on the 15-day IL with lower back pain. In a corresponding move, Matt Svaundsen was recalled from the minors. Good to see Svaundsen back after his early season struggles. And Fernandez was actually looking pretty decent in a small sample size, near 40% strikeout rate with a sub-2 ERA. So definitely potential from Fernandez. I know he throws pretty hard. I hope I'm right about that. Yes, he does throw pretty hard in the mid-90s. Relatively hard, harder than me. But he doesn't control his pitches too well. So maybe this was just a little hot streak for him across the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm not so sure on Fernandez. Might be a little bit like an empty velocity case with his fastball, and the secondaries aren't that great either, but he had been getting a crazy strikeout rate going, and I don't really know how to explain it based on his stuff. So, I don't know. Anyway, yeah,
no, he had a 19% whiff rate. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know if it was going to be sustainable, but, Svaundsen, hopefully, I don't know what to think about him anymore. It's really, I mean, it's like the Porter Hodge of this season. I hope the sinker fastball commands better, and I don't know, we get more whiffs on his slider, but we'll see. That's probably going to take a while for Svaundsen to earn his way back into the middle relief setup innings that they had hoped for him starting the year.
Yeah, I mean, he figured it out a little bit in the minors. He didn't allow a run in 4 appearances while striking out 40% of the batters and walking just 5, so maybe he'll be a little bit better.
Yeah. Hope so.
Yeah. All right. That's Matt Svaundsen returning with the IL placement of Ryan Fernandez. Probably the most significant IL placement. Jeremiah Estrada was placed on the 15-day IL with knee inflammation, and David Morgan was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. This makes sense because Estrada's just been struggling. He really hasn't had it this year. I think having an injury explains away the struggles that he's had.
Yeah, the first time he was on the IL was arm related, right? I think so. Now we have a knee. Because the lead up to that, I had noticed that like the velocity of all of a sudden just fell back down to 95 miles per hour. Command was not there. Very similar to what was going on the start of the year of Estrada. So, I don't know if it's the knee or the arm or what it is, or there's something else going on mentally similar to like whatever's going on with Brian Abreu. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is unfortunate because Estrada, when he's right, when he's healthy, like, yeah, he's one of the best relievers in baseball and one of the best, setup guys who no one really talks about that much. So hopefully he comes back throwing 97 plus, he can continue to throw because he came back, he had a couple good outings, and then just kind of all fell back down to where he was earlier in the season. So hopefully it takes whatever time he needs to get completely right. And the thing is, the Padres have so much depth, they can live without him. They'll be fine with Jason Adam and Bradley Rodriguez, and even David Morgan's not that bad, a guy that they send right up and down. Like, he's would be on almost any other team's bullpen probably.
Yeah, definitely. It was elbow tendonitis for Estrada in April.
Yeah.
So definitely less scary with the knee injury, but still, I think, explains away his recent struggles. Next, we'll move to Rob Zastrzyzny, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a trapezius strain. He's not in the circus. That's a shoulder injury. Robert Gasser was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. He's in the rotation. And then the Brewers also placed DL Hall on the 15-day IL with a pec strain. He's not expected to return until late July, so it's going to be longer than a minimum stint for DL Hall. Brian Fitzpatrick was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move and then subsequently placed on the 15-day IL with a UCL strain. He's currently seeking a second opinion, so we could have Tommy John for Brian Fitzpatrick. Drew Rahm was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. We also saw Craig Yoho recalled and subsequently optioned for Taylor Rashi to join the Brewers bullpen. He was acquired from the Diamondbacks. Oh, was it Kunal? Did he go to the
Twins? Rashi went to the Twins. Yeah.
See, I MIN versus MIL.
That's, I get it. They're right next to each other too on the map. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, okay. Well,
but Kunal that makes more sense. And I was mad at that at first, but if Kunal's throwing 100 miles per hour, then whatever. I guess Craig Yoho has to go. But yeah, a lot of lefties you mentioned. I don't even think Sestrinski even pitched. I think he was activated zero off the innings. IL. Yeah. He was activated off the IL and then placed back on the IL.
They have five lefty relievers on the injured list right now, the Brewers.
Yeah, Hudson's still waiting to come back. And Zerpa's out for the year. All of a sudden their left-handed depth is being tested with, you know, Drew Rahm being on the roster was not on anyone's radar. So, I think they'll be fine with they have, even with all these lefty injuries, they still have Ashby. They have some depth on the way back. Craig Yoho I'm bummed to see that he only got to pitch twice in Colorado and that was it. And, we don't get to see him in a real ballpark. And, but he was actually pretty good in Colorado and he should be back up sooner rather than later. I'm guessing they want to have a certain amount of lefties in that bullpen. That's why they're doing what they're doing. But, if, you know, Anderson or if something happens with Kunell and that doesn't work out, then I'm sure Yoho will be back up.
He's still got two more options after that one. So he'll still be up and down, I assume, because he can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Lastly, Cooper Criswell was placed on the 15-day IL with a shoulder strain. Nick Davila was recalled from the minors in the corresponding move. Not super huge, but Criswell has been a pretty good front end reliever for the Mariners this year.
Yeah, he has been. I mean, he is what he is. He's not going to strike out, you know, a ton of guys and doesn't throw hard, but he's been a really good reliever for them for kind of throughout most of his career. He's been solid, just not overwhelming. So, I mean, could be a big loss for them, especially someone who eats innings like Criswell. And Davila is not super exciting option, but, you know, he's not going to pitch big innings for them. So, they'll be okay without Criswell, I think.
All right. And in terms of news, Kenley Jansen has started a rehab assignment. He's supposed to start it today. He's been out with pelvic inflammation for a couple of weeks. So if all goes well for Jansen during his rehab this week, he could return by this weekend. So Will Vest's time in the closer role could be coming to a very short end.
Yeah. And he's been pitching well, but yeah, it doesn't seem like that's going to be forever. So it's still, I mean, Jansen, again, I think the Tigers are in a position to make a nice little run here. And maybe they keep Scooble through the deadline and just try to win now. I mean, that division is very winnable. And you got Jansen coming back. Best is throwing well. Drew Anderson looks really good. I think their bullpen might be figuring things out. So yeah, getting Jansen back and healthy would be also a big plus for them. The one guy who hasn't really figured things out is Kyle Finnegan. That's, I don't know if he figures things out though. That's, yeah, you know, that bullpen now is four deep with pretty good arms.
Right. Right. Definitely would be one of the top trios if we had Vest, Finnegan and Jansen pitching at their peaks.
Yeah.
All right, let's move now into our three up, three down section where we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks, which you can find over at pitcherlist.com. Let's start with the risers, beginning with Josh Hader, who has taken over the closer role and sort of wiped away the fears that we had that maybe he wouldn't be at his peak after his rehab assignment didn't look too great. He was not having the best control, nor was he throwing as hard as he used to, but he's looked like classic Hader in three appearances thus far.
Yeah, I mean, same guy that we saw last year who was one of the best relievers in baseball. So no concerns for now, at least. You know, I'm all the way back in on Hader. And, yeah, he should be the top five closer as long as he's healthy the rest of the way. I think that's just, you know, how good he is with that. He's already the strikeout rate so far. And, like, yeah, I mean, just nasty stuff from him.
Yeah, Josh Hader is certainly elite. Last week, we talked extensively about Lucas Urseg after he got another chance to blow a save. And we speculated, how's that bullpen going to shake out? And Rick had a dark horse, Alex Lang. And guess what? Alex Lang is now the closer of the Royals. So he's rising up the closer ranks here. He's gotten three saves this past week. Urseg did get one, which was a little bit frustrating, but I mean,
no one was available.
Nobody was available, but sure, it was three of the past 4 days for both Lynch and Lang, but you know, I'd prefer Matt Strom. I'd prefer anybody but Urseg, but sure, if Cuadrado still has some good feelings towards Oseg, then maybe he needs to get checked out. But looks like Alex Lang is also in the ninth inning right now, gunning lead for off another walk. Save. Yeah,
he's thrown six straight balls, which is
there. We go. We're that's back the Alex Lang we know.
This is the Alex Lang we're used to.
Yeah.
The command had been good. It had been good for like almost a month. And before he started closing out games, he actually had a pretty good streak of not walking guys. And yeah, he's going to make things interesting in the ninth. But I don't know. He at least, I mean, just like Oseg was making things interesting. I still, Lang at least has two really good off speed pitches. Like, you know, his stuff overall is better than Oseg's. The fastball, maybe not. We wouldn't argue that, but I think Lang's, you know, his changeup and slider are better than what Oseg has. And it's just the command now. They both have command issues. But yeah, I don't, you know if I buy Lang being the closer the rest of the way, but
right,
someone to, you know, you can pick him up now, get saves, and then once the wheels fall off, you let him go. You know, I mean, there's a non-zero chance he ends up being the closer the rest of the way, or the Royals probably at 27-39. They're probably looking. They could get him. They could get a pretty good chip for him at the deadline if they get a nice string of saves and, you know, can boost his value a little bit. So, yeah, you hold your nose when you pick up someone like Alex Lang, but like, you know, outside of the top 20 closers, there's not. You know, you're throwing darts anyway. So I think Lang is right on the border of 2021 right now. And, you know, would you rather take a chance on Sam Bachman taking over the closer role eventually, or take a guy like Lang who we know is in the closer role now, or exactly, as long as he doesn't screw up tonight? But yeah, so I think, you know, Lang is definitely worth a look. And in most deep, or even 12 teamers as your third closer, it's not a terrible option. You just got to know when to move on.
Right. I'm picking him up everywhere, but still don't fully believe that he's going to be great the rest of the season. Who would you say leads the team the rest of the way in saves between Lang, Oseg, and Lynch? Maybe throwing Carlos Estevez. Yeah, throwing Carlos Estevez too. Why not?
I think Lang. It's not going to be Oseg. I don't think Lynch is starting to fall back down to earth. And Estevez, we'll see when he's at. I want to see a rehab outing where he's throwing 95, and I just don't believe. I will believe it when I see it, because I don't know that he has that in his arm right now, whatever is going on. So, yeah, I'll say Lang. They didn't use Strom tonight either. I don't know.
He's warming up right now, just in case. Lang did get an out. He got a fly out, but he threw a wild pitch during that at bat too. So he's got a runner in scoring position, two strikes on Kyle Higashioka with one out right now. So I'll definitely notify you if he blows this save, but right now it's fine.
This is why I don't love closers who are like their primary is a slider or a changeup, and you're going to get wild pitches every now and then. And yeah, it could be a mess, but I don't know. We'll see. I think Lang will be fine here. He's got Higashio. Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll get through this. Yeah, he makes it interesting every time.
He got a huge whiff from Higashioka, but it was a wild pitch, so now the runner's on third.
That runner doesn't matter. They're up two. It's fine.
Yeah.
Let him score.
You got this. You got this, Alex. All right. Our last riser is Grant Taylor, who got another save for the White Sox this past week. I really think he would be a top five closer if he was getting every single save. He's not, but just the fact that the club is willing to let him get a couple saves, I think, is huge for his fantasy relevance.
We got some news on that too. It's the really? Eighth inning. Well, it's the eighth inning in that Braves White Sox game. It's a 4-4 game, and Sir Anthony Dominguez is pitching the eighth. So,
oh gosh,
I don't know. Taylor got the last save there. Maybe he's going to get the ninth inning again tonight. Yeah, I mean, he's been one of, if not the best reliever in baseball over the past month. Like, just crazy stuff. And yeah, I think I think now is the time to buy in before he does take over that role. His roster numbers are still really low. And I get it, because it's frustrating. I'm sure like a lot of people have picked him up and then dropped him because they, you know, you're speculating and then it doesn't happen. But I wonder if now is the, this is it. Like, this is the moment where we see the changing of the guard there, because it's just, Taylor's been so dominant. And they're, again, it's like weird because they were, he was throwing two innings in the beginning of the year, starting games, but now I feel like he's back to mostly being a one inning, late inning guy. So I don't know. For me, and especially now, I think maybe the White Sox have changed their tune a little bit since they're winning. Like, they probably weren't, you know, now that they're like in the mix for a playoff spot, like, all right, we probably need Grant Taylor to be essentially our Mason Miller. You know, this is like our closer for now. But yeah, I think now is the time to buy. If he acts as the closer for the rest of the week, gets like a save or two, then yeah, it's probably going to have to move him into like the top at least 15, maybe 10 next week. But yeah, we'll see. I'll believe it when I see it with the White Sox. But as far as stashing Taylor goes, I think this is probably the last call you're going to have to get in on that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been very good this year. Sub 2 ERA, 38% strikeout rate. Definitely one of the best relievers in baseball. If the White Sox will trust him as a closer, he has all the potential in the world to be a top five closer moving forward if he gets the majority of the saves. And I think you're spot on when you talk about the White Sox winning and sort of reconsidering how they use their
best, I think that's a big deal.
Best pitcher.
Yeah.
He's
If they were like 23-37, I think he would probably be pitching like two innings in the sixth and seventh. And like, yeah, but now that they actually need him to get big outs for them and like things matter. So yeah. Alex Lang.
Well, got the job done. Yeah. Got a strikeout of Jock Peterson on three pitches. Just some nasty changeups. That changeup he has is really good.
It's really good. Yeah.
All right. Well, scoreless ninth for Alex Lang. He holds down that Royals closer role for now. Now we'll look at our fallers from the past week. You got more than three here, Rick. I think we got a lot of guys falling.
Yeah. A little bit, like a little micro falls, I think. I can clump Devin Williams and Andres Munoz into one, and it's just, Munoz had a bad outing the other day, and Williams, it's those two guys, and they're very different. I mean, Munoz is slider oriented, Williams changeup oriented, but they both have like very shaky fastball command, and slider and changeup command as well. But it's like the fastball command with both of them has been so hit or miss this year, and to the point where like Munoz will go out and it's like last night and he threw one fastball. It's like I don't love it. It works sometimes, but like, you know, it's because he's not throwing his slider in the zone, you know, 50% of the time either. So it's just you know, worry about both those guys. Consistency is just going to be an issue with the way that their arsenals work, and their command is just not that great.
Right. All right. So Devin Williams and Andres Munoz in that first group. The second group you're saying is sort of more health focused in terms of their falls. So Aldis Chapman and Trevor Megill.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, but Chapman's last outing against the Yankees, he was dealing with a hamstring injury and like he could barely move off the mound at the end of the game. Right. I guess he's fine. They're saying he's fine. There's not.
Because they want to trade him.
I know. But even, I think, you know, hopefully he's fine, but still like his stuff was terrible in that game. Like,
Velo is way down.
Yeah. It was not a good outing, but he still managed to get through it. I think it was the bottom of the Yankees order. So, you know, Trevor Megill, I guess that just came up today with him. Just, I don't know if it's just like general soreness or some sort of soreness, and he was not available. I was wondering why he didn't pitch last night in that crazy game.
Me too.
But he was not available due to soreness. Don't know. No IL placement tonight. So I guess they're hoping he's available tonight or tomorrow. But yeah, something to keep an eye on with Megill, who, yeah, coming off a little bit of a rocky outing in Colorado, no pun intended. But I still believe in Megill as long as he's healthy. It's just health's always been a little tricky with him. We have not seen him healthy for a full season yet.
All right. Well, don't let go of Abner Uribe just yet. And lastly, our last faller is Pete Fairbanks, as he just doesn't really get many opportunities to close, and another save opportunity taken away from him tonight after
he got a win.
Marlins. He did get a win.
Oh, did he come in?
He must have come in.
No.
They tacked on four insurance runs. the Marlins did to ruin his save opportunity.
Oh, this is one of those weird wins. I saw this happened. So this was a judgment by the scorekeeper that he came in with a 4-run lead in the ninth, and they gave him a win because Fauché blew the save in the eighth.
Even though it was inherited runs.
Yeah, and they didn't feel like giving him a win with the blown save, so they gave it to Fairbanks. Weird, but it is stupid. Especially since they had like the same, they both allowed a hit and a walk. Anyway, Fairbanks has an ERA of 7 still, though, at this point of the year, which is, you know, the outing this weekend was super frustrating. His command, his fastball command, which usually his fastball command's not that bad, it just fell apart on him. I don't know. I hope he gets things turned around because I like Pete Fairbanks. I think the arsenal's good enough. It's just, I don't know if it's, what's going on. It's probably a mental thing with him at this point, just trying to, I don't know. We talked about how he's throwing that cutter more often and like he kind of lost the slider for a little bit. And now the slider hasn't been as good. So I think he needs to kind of, you know, go back to his roots and essentially and get that slider going again. We'll see. We'll see how he, I mean, no, not an intimate, he's not going to lose his job anytime soon, but I mean, Anthony Bender's been pitching really well, so maybe someone you want to stash in a deeper league.
All right, that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, our risers were Josh Hader, Alex Lang, and Grant Taylor, and our fallers were Devin Williams, Andrés Muñoz, Aroldis Chapman, Trevor Miguel, and Pete Fairbanks. Now we can get into our main topic and talk about the best bullpens in baseball right now. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. Let's talk about some of the best bullpens in baseball. Rick, were we ranking the best bullpens or the best bullpen trios? I sort of did trios. I don't think it changes it that much.
It doesn't. So that's the thing. I started to do like trios and then like quads and then it ended up just like, you know, either way, it's kind of all, it kind of all ends up being like very close to being the same rank anyway for me. A little bit different, but we can talk about like the top three and then like who would the fourth guy be? And, you know,
right. Those are sort of the tiebreakers.
Yeah. Right.
That's all right. Well,
why I think we both have the same first team.
Yeah.
I think
first two.
And I think it, I think at least for the first one, it's, I mean, the depth is crazy.
So we both have the Braves at number one. I mean, the definitely the top trio with Raisel Iglesias, Robert Suarez, and Dylan Lee. But they do have some great depth in that Braves bullpen with Tyler Kinley, Didier Fuentes, Dylan Dodd, Reynaldo Lopez, and I guess Carlos Carrasco is still kicking around. But that top trio of Dylan Lee, Raisel Iglesias, Robert Suarez is absolutely cracked. All of these guys, sub two ERAs, a couple of them sub one ERAs. Dylan Lee's close to a sub one as well. They've all got high strikeout rates. Robert Suarez, not really a big strikeout guy, but it is one of the best trios in baseball. And when the Braves make the playoffs, they're going to be a tough trio to crack in the games that the Braves are winning.
Yeah. I almost didn't put them one because like, I do have some, I mean, questions about both Suarez and Iglesias, but mostly like Suarez's stuff's kind of, the strikeout rate, like you said, it's not, it was good in the beginning of the year. And now the stuff, the velo has kind of come down a little bit. The strikeout rate's not there. He had a scoreless inning today with no strikeouts. Grant Taylor is pitching the ninth in a tie game. But yeah, I think that first, I mean, they really have two like high leverage units with like Lee Iglesias. We saw it the other night with our, you know, we have Lee Iglesias and Suarez, which are obviously probably the top three guys right now, top trio in baseball right now. But then the other night they had, you know, Kinley, Dodd, and Fuentes go out and close out a game as well. And like those three guys would probably be the top high leverage unit for like 10 teams in baseball right now. Like that, there's a lot of teams that would gladly take that three over whatever they're rolling out in the seventh, eighth, and ninth. So, I mean, Fuentes is such a, it's so fun seeing him in the bullpen with his fastball and slider. So glad that they're willing to do that. Cause a lot of teams wouldn't do that with their top pitching prospects, but I mean, his stuff plays up right now, right away for them. So yeah, that's a really tough group to beat, with Atlanta.
Yeah. You're right about the depth there. I mean, Tyler Kinley, super underrated, but you know, Fuentes may be flawed as a starter, but he's got the ideal profile for being a dominant reliever. Whether or not he sticks in that role, I don't know. But Dylan Dodd is a failed starter, and he's taken his game to another level. Sub 2 ERA, 34% strikeout rate. Probably neither of those stick, but he's definitely much better as a reliever.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the second half of last year and combine it with what Dodd's doing this year, I mean, those numbers are, I mean, probably 50 innings. I'm going to look at it after this because now I'm curious, but like that's probably 50 innings of like elite reliever numbers from Dylan Dodd. Like that's a guy, again, they have Dylan Lee there. They have the two Dylans, and like, I mean, both of them are just really underrated and nasty from the left side.
Yeah, definitely pretty impressive from that Braves bullpen. There is also a consensus for the number two here, as the Padres have Mason Miller, Jason Adam, and Adrian Morahone as their top three. They've also got guys like Jeremiah Estrada, who's on the IL, and Bradley Rodriguez, who's been pitching well. And they got a ton of depth there as well, probably maybe not to the same extent that the Braves have at the same level, but still very solid depth in Ron Marinaccio, Yuki Matsui, David Morgan, and Wandy Peralta. Just a super solid Padres bullpen, and they have the best closer in baseball too as the cherry on top there. And Adrian Morahone might be the top lefty reliever in baseball. He's just looked so good, especially in the underlying metrics department. So Padres bullpen is almost unmatched beyond the beyond the Braves.
Yeah, I feel like maybe the timing of this is I had them won, but then it's like, you know, Estrada's not been the same guy. That's really the difference for me between the Braves and Padres is I want to see, you know, a healthy Estrada. Morahone's had some bad luck. Jason Adams been like had a weird season, but I do think he'll be better. But yeah, Bradley is like the nice little fifth option for them when they're all healthy. So yeah, I mean, Miller obviously helps, you know, bump them up wherever they just having Mason Miller puts you in the top three conversation, no matter what, but
right.
Yeah. The rest of the group of Morahone, Estrada, and Adam when healthy, that's yeah. Really, really tough to beat.
Yeah. They definitely have a higher ceiling. I think last year and the year before, maybe they were more clearly the number one because, you know, Morahone, Estrada, and Adam were all at their peaks, but it seems we've seen a little bit Suarez of a step back. Too. Right. That's true. Yeah. That's crazy. But we've seen a little bit of a step back from the guys behind Mason Miller. So that puts them as a number two option here. Number three, you've got the Dodgers. I've got the Dodgers at four. I can see arguments for three, but I think it revolves around how much you factor Edwin Diaz into that group. I think if you have Edwin Diaz, who's going to be out for a while longer and didn't pitch well when he pitched this season, I think, If you have Edwin Diaz at your peak and you got Tanner Scott and Alex Vesia setting him up, that's one of the best trios in baseball, I think even rivaling the Braves. But because Diaz is injured and a lot of the other guys you're going to say are big factors in this bullpen are also injured, it's not the top tier bullpen that the Braves and Padres have. Yeah. But the depth that they've uncovered beyond that is still pretty impressive with guys like Will Klein stepping up, Kyle Hurt coming out of nowhere, Edgardo Henriquez throws 100 miles per hour, and even Jack Dreyer is really underrated, and they somehow have Blake Treinen is still solid enough. So a lot of depth in that Dodgers bullpen, but it's like the argument about the peak of that top three really revolves around the health and success of Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, I mean, they have, I think if we're talking about, you know, 1 through 8 or even like, I mean, the Dodgers could go, if we're talking about health and like guys hypothetically being healthy, the Dodgers have 12 really good relievers.
Right.
But yeah, I think, yeah, I'm factoring in Edwin Diaz at, you know, being himself again. And then like, you know, Scott and Diaz and then Vesia is a huge, that's a really good group right there. And then pick whatever righty you. I mean, Edgardo Henriquez has looked awesome lately. This weekend, he was the most dominant pitcher in the mound in that Dodgers Angel series. He's just averaging 101.5 all of a sudden and has some sort of command. I mean, if he figures it out, like, good luck. I mean, that's just, it's not fair to have him also in that bullpen if he ever figures it out. So, yeah, this, you know, I don't know. We obviously love, you know, the Dodgers spend a lot of money, but then they have guys like Kyle Hurt and Will Klein and Edgardo Henriquez and Jack Dreyer and Alex Vesia, who they've developed into just, you know, studs out of their bullpen. So,
right.
Yeah, It's a lot of guys that can throw at you and beat you with.
All right, then you have a big gap after those first three, the Braves, Padres, Dodgers, big gap. Yeah. And then we get to the Phillies. And I think the big gap there is that, right, those top three are really good, but also everybody after that is sort of in a closer clump than the top three.
Yeah.
I think there's an argument to rank like the next four or five in any order.
Yeah, pretty much this my last like four through 10 is like not far off. I moved some teams around. I think I did have, yeah, we'll talk about some of these. Like this four through six group was very, especially that group was interchangeable for me. Depending on if you're going with top three or top four.
Exactly.
So like the Phillies, like Duran, Kerkering, Alvarado for me. And then the fourth being Keller, probably people would probably assume Brad Keller, but Jonathan Bolin's my dude. I think he's been awesome lately. I think he's really going to be a stud for them. And Alvarado's had some bad luck, but I think, you know, the metrics suggest he'll have some, you know, better performances moving forward. And Kerkering's figured things out. Obviously, Duran is a stud. So I think Duran being who he is helps elevate this over the Mariners and Guardians for me. Sure. But also, you know, the Guardians have Cade Smith, so I can't, you know, argue with that. But I just feel like I like the three to four options behind or after Duran a little bit better than what Cleveland and even Seattle has.
Yeah, and I think since I was ranking these based off trios, I had the Phillies down at nine because I don't think the peak of this bullpen is as good as some of the contemporaries. Like outside of Duran, I think Keller and Kerkering and Alvarado are solid, but they haven't shown to be elite options like they were in the past couple of years. There's definitely still potential in those arms, but they haven't shown the same upside this year that we've seen from some of the other top setup guys. But I do still think they're top 10 worthy, and Yon Duran's incredible. So if I was ranking the full bullpen for the Phillies, though, that's where they start to separate themselves a little bit because they can go five deep of really solid guys and support that with even more depth beyond that. But I definitely can understand the number four ranking if we're looking at the complete bullpen. Moving down the list at number five, you've got the Mariners. This is another one, too, where I think if you're looking at the whole bullpen,
four that, helps them a lot. Yeah. Or five even. Yeah,
exactly. That makes a lot more sense because they have Andres Munoz, Matt Brash and Jose Ferreira as the top three. And then beyond that, they go Gabe Spire and Eduard Bizzardo. But for me, I had them at five as well too. So I guess not much different there. I think it's just the difference where we have the Guardians and Phillies right now, but that's because I was ranking trios and you were ranking the full bullpen, but yeah, it makes sense that the Mariners bullpen is solid at the top. It's super deep as well. I think last year, this was one of the, I would say top three bullpens, and I wouldn't be surprised if they get back up there. We haven't seen the same strikeout upside from Gabe Spire and Eduard Bizzardo hasn't shown the same command.
The strikeout stuff from even Brash, Ferrer, Spire, and Bizzardo is not quite, you know, exciting. Especially I mean, Spire last year, but yeah, this year, same. We've seen Brash strikeout guys at a high level, but not the last 2 years. So that's my one nitpick with them too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely very effective, but they don't have the same strikeout upside. They've shown it in the past, though, so there's definitely some name value there that I think helps us be like, hey, there's potential. We've seen Spire be one of the best lefties in baseball. Bizzardo was trusted way too often in the playoffs last year, and there's definitely still potential for Jose Ferrer, but I think that Mariners bullpen is really solid, and a five rating, I think, is perfect and spot on. At number six, you have the Guardians. I had the Guardians at number three. Like I said, that's because the trio of Cade Smith, Hunter Gaddis, and Eric Sabrowski, who's on the IL. When that trio is at its peak, I mean, it's hard to compete with that because Cade Smith's, you know, top three reliever. Sabrowski looked like maybe the top setup man in baseball before he got injured. Yeah. And Hunter Gaddis was, he's been solid. He's like a very solid number three guy when he's at his peak. He hasn't been at his peak this year, but regardless, I think this Guardians bullpen is solid and they've added some depth. I think Sean Armstrong and Colin Holderman are very decent. Tim Herron as well. And Matt Festa is a little bit underrated, but I mean, Colin Holderman's been incredible this year.
I think if you want to go trios, you have to swap Holderman for Gaddis. And then that's pretty interesting. Gaddis has just been terrible. And I think he has been getting absolutely destroyed by lefties this year. And Colin Holderman has not been. I was looking into that a little bit today, which is interesting because you would think Holderman with his, you know, he's sinker sweeper guy. But Holderman added a curveball this year, and he was used to throw a cutter against lefties, which never worked out for him. The curveball this year has been working, and Gattis is throwing his fastball, and he's throwing his changeup more, but it's just not been effective. So I think, you know, if Sobrowski's healthy, a Cade Smith, Sobrowski, Holderman trio is very, very intriguing. That's probably up in the top. You know, I would put them ahead of the Phillies with just because of Sobrowski's right. health is a huge factor in this for me too. Mm-hmm. If he's even if he's healthy now, I probably put them four. But it does sound like he threw a bullpen recently. It does sound like things are trending in the right way for Sobrowski. But yeah, I mean, you talk about top duos. I think Cade Smith, Sobrowski might be the best possibly out there right now when they're healthy.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I felt like their position as like maybe the top setup man and the number two closer in baseball was such a good combination that you can throw anybody in that three spot. And as a trio, they're top five for me. Maybe I was a little bit too gung-ho about them to put them at three ahead of the Dodgers, but I think four is fine. Even five is fine. So definitely Guardians have a really good top end and they have decent depth there in the rest of the bullpen. Moving down the list, we have the Mets. You have them at seven. I had the Mets at 10. And I think that's just because it's more so Luke Weaver hasn't shown the same ceiling that we've seen from him in the past. But
he's looked Evan good Williams, this year. Good. I'll fight for Luke Weaver. But yeah.
Sure. I'm not saying he's bad or that he's, you know, average, but he's not the guy who was one of the best closers in baseball for the Yankees a couple of years ago. The strikeout upside just hasn't been there. 23% strikeout rate, 12.5% swinging strike rate. He's going to be more of a middling strikeout guy, but the success is there. 2.5 ERA is solid, and Devin Williams continues to have the BABIP issues that have haunted him for the past couple of years. But Brooks Raley's an underrated number three, and you have great depth in AJ Minter coming back and Wascar Brazoban figuring things out a little bit. Outside of that, not very much depth for the Mets.
Yeah, I would like to see, I don't know, maybe this is far-fetched, but like the way that the Braves have used, you know, Fuentes, could Jonah Tong be like an interesting reliever in this Mets bullpen? Like, as I don't know, something like that. Austin Warren's been pretty good for them. I don't know if that's like, that's something that's going to stick around, but the stuff has been through the, like off the charts for Austin Warren, really good sweeper. But yeah, I think, maybe Weaver doesn't have the strikeout stuff he used to have, but him and Raley have been, you know, nails for the most part as the seventh and eighth inning guys. Williams has obviously been hot and cold. You know, if Williams was having a perfect season, I think there's a case to bring these guys up to like the top four or five. And then, AJ Minter is kind of the wild card. He just came back. He's looked good so far, but if he's the AJ Minter of old, that's a really good top four at least. And you have two lefties, two righties. So there's pretty good depth there. If again, there's some age factor and health issues and command issues, but there's still, for as bad as the Mets have been and how, you know, their season's gone, that bullpen shouldn't be an issue for them.
Next, we have the Blue Jays at number eight. And I think this was the hardest bullpen to rank because there's so much of how much do you put into the surface stats? How much do you put into the underlying metrics? How much do like Louis Varland and Jeff Hoffman sort of offset each other in that argument? Because obviously Varland's ERA is going to come down and Hoffman's going to go the other way. So how much does that factor into it? It's also a deep bullpen. I mean, they've got options. They've got Jimmy Garcia coming back with, Tyler Rogers is one of the most solid relievers in baseball, and Braden Fisher, Mason Flaherty, and Tommy Nance is some really underrated options. But I could see the Blue Jays going up or down this list dependent on how you feel. Right. Dependent on how you feel about Hoffman. Right.
Really?
He's like the biggest X factor. So I think the eight is pretty good because I had them at seven. So I think that 7-8 range makes sense for the Blue Jays.
Yeah. I think if Hoffman was pitching to where his, you know, peripherals suggest, this is, you know, that top three is probably the best. It probably puts them closer to like one of those top three teams. I mean, probably ahead of the Dodgers, they're probably number three. Yeah. So it's really comes down to Hoffman and what, it's hard to, I can't put him because the results matter at the end of the day. So,
sure.
But yeah, if we're also talking the 1 through 8, as far as bullpens go, the Blue Jays are near the top. And I think when we did this in the off season, I had the Blue Jays, I think, number one, just because of the depth is just so crazy. And, you know, being able to roll, like Braden Fisher doesn't even have an important role in this like bullpen. He's just, he'll open games like pitch in the fifth, sixth inning. He'll get a save like last week, but like, yeah, he can be used anywhere, but he's still really good. He would be a closer for a lot of teams right now. So yeah, there's just a lot of depth there, especially when Jimmy Garcia comes back. I don't even know how he fits in to this whole equation, because he should be pitching the seventh or eighth inning when he's at full strength, but they have so many guys. So we'll see. It's not a bad problem to have if you're a Blue Jays fan.
Right. All right. Next, at number 9, you've got the Milwaukee Brewers. I had the Brewers at 6, and maybe I'm putting a little bit too much.
Yeah, it's a weight trio
on,
thing.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a trio thing. Also, maybe it's a little bit too much weight on the performance that McGill and Uribe had last year, because I think Uribe hasn't been as dominant this year. McGill has had his ups and downs as well. But as a trio, Trevor McGill, Abner Uribe, and Aaron Ashby are pretty hard to compete with. The depth, though, is certainly being tested. But hey, maybe they should be top 3 if Joel Kunal's throwing 100 miles per hour.
Yeah. And like another, and I know they're trying to find they're searching for another lefty, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Shane Drohan was pitching great for them out of the bullpen. So if I consider him a reliever, between Drohan, Ashby, Uribe, and McGill, that's a really good unit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like him as a starter too, maybe. I don't know. We'll see, but yeah, the top 3, and Ashby had a bad outing last night in that band box in Vegas. I don't really put too much into it. I think he was the one who gave up the home run to Jonah Heim, which was like, what is this?
Yeah, that home run was crazy.
Yeah, that's a fly ball. So yeah, I like, I mean, there's That trio of Uribe, Ashby, and McGill is like a lot of upside in all three, but they each have like pretty much command issues for all of them. Ashby's whip's high. I mean, yeah, they're all, you know, they all have their issues, but the upside when they're all pitching well is like, that's a almost impossible unit to beat.
Right. And for the last ones at tied for 10th place, you have the Red Sox and Diamondbacks. Let's start with the Red Sox, as they are the top team here. I had the Red Sox at 8, and I think that's because I was weighing pretty heavily the Aroldis Chapman, Garrett Whitlock duo.
It's the same thing as the Brewers, where like it falls apart after. Yeah.
Or I felt more similar to like the Guardians, where you have like the really good closer and the really good setup men, and then it sort of falls apart from there. But yeah, not a lot of depth in that Boston bullpen, but Chapman and Whitlock are definitely carrying it. Justin Slayton is solid sometimes. He's not right now, 6 ERA, but the underlying metrics are good.
Yeah, he's had two. All of his runs have come in 2 outings. So it's like one of those where you take away those 2 outings, he's been perfect. But that's the weird, you can't really just do that with him. And I don't know, when healthy and all these guys are, you know, on, you know, at that full strength, Chapman, Whitlock, Slayton, that's, you know, as far as trios go, I probably would have had them around 5 or 6. And they probably should be higher. I don't even know why. It feels like they're, you know, I guess Slayton we haven't seen a whole lot of in the past 2 years, and he's been a little bit shaky when he has been healthy. But then, yeah, if you want to take a deeper look, and why I have them tied for 10th is because the depth behind those three is bad. I mean, it's between, for me, it's like Giovanni Moran and Tyron Guerrero, who would have thought those two guys would be impact relievers for the Red Sox
right.
The start of the year. So, yeah, there's not a lot of depth. Guerrero and Moran have shown some things, and Moran's hurt now, but I like both of those guys better than Greg Weisert or whatever else they're rolling out behind them. So, after the deadline, they'll probably not be in this conversation, but
no.
For now, the Red Sox back end trio is still, it's the best part of the team right now, if we're being honest. So,
yeah. All right. So you have tied for 10th, the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I think that one's fair, especially if we're looking at the whole bullpen. I also think that you're putting a lot of weight on AJ Puck, because AJ Puck was great last year. He also hasn't pitched in almost a year, and he hasn't pitched in the majors this year. I honestly don't even think it's fair to count him at all because he hasn't appeared at all. But you know, if we're counting Edwin Diaz, then I guess we can count AJ Puck. So regardless,
he's close to returning.
I think that good. Bullpen's great though.
Yeah, and even without him, it's like you still have, you know, Seawall's pitched great, Murillo, Kevin Ginkle's all of a sudden pitching
bounced
well.
Back. The Gink.
The Ginkle mania is back. And yeah, the velo looks, he looks more like his 2022 to 2024 self these days. Mm-hmm. Taylor Clark, I think someone got blown up in that bullpen today. I think it might have been Taylor Clark, but before that, you know, Clark's whip was always, he was always a huge, you know, sub.
It was Brandon eight. Garcia.
Oh, it was Garcia.
And Taylor Clark. Garcia allowed four runs. Clark allowed two.
Ah, Garcia, that's tough. Because I really was liking what Brandon Garcia was doing. I still believe in him even after a bad outing. But it's a pretty deep, it's not like a spectacular. Like, you're not going to get blown away by, I mean, earlier in the year, Juan Murillo was looking awesome. He's kind of come back down to being really good and just not like, you know, maybe not an elite, you know, future closer type, but still a good reliever. Same with Garcia.
It's a lot of Tobys.
It's like, yeah, like between Toby's and Holly's.
Yeah, solid guys.
Yeah, I think Clark's definitely a Toby. I think Ginkle's probably a Toby, Holly somewhere in between there. But yeah, I don't know. Seawald's been surprising this year, and I don't see any reason to think that doesn't stick. He's doing the same thing he's always done, just at a better, just doing it better. And, you know, he's back to kind of being the Seawald where he, you know, with the Mariners, where he was, you know, someone we could trust. So Puck looks good in the minors. That's kind of the reason why I just wanted to mention them, is because when you get Puck back, maybe we see Justin Martinez back as well. And
right. And then September. It becomes an elite bullpen.
And then, yeah, if what if Seawald's still just dealing and like you have Puck and Martinez setting him up? I mean, yeah, it could be a really, really fun unit.
I agree. I did not rank the Diamondbacks, but I did have an honorable mention of the Orioles, and I think figured out a lot of stuff in the bullpen this year. When Helsley is back, I know they won't get Felix Bautista. I can't count him, but when Helsley's back, is he okay? Yeah. Maybe we'll get him back by the end of the year. But the trio of Helsley, Garcia, and Kittredge is really solid. I think the depth of Cano, Nunez, and Wolfram, and you know, Aiken and Wells have had their moments, but there's depth, there's upside in the top three there in Baltimore. I think the duo of Helsley and Garcia is very underrated. So I think like this bullpen healthy is definitely on the verge of top 10.
I think, I mean, a month ago, I would have probably had them in the top six, but like now, you know, Kittredge is starting to pitch better. Nunez is not. I still think Nunez is going to have a really good career. It's some as a starter, reliever, whatever. It's just not right now. But yeah, I think Wolfram, Cano, Aiken's pitching better than what his numbers say. Yeah, I think depth wise, they're another team where you can go like, you know, seven or eight deep, and there isn't really, you know, a major like, you know, oh, that guy doesn't belong here. You know, it's, but right now they're just not pitching well. So I think that was why it kind of, I'm not too high on them. But when these guys are healthy and pitching well, yeah, I definitely see it.
Yeah, I think there's a couple other bullpens that I think could vault themselves into this conversation. I think the White Sox are getting there. They have Grant Taylor there if Dominguez continues to pitch well, and Sean Newcomb and Brian Hudson are good lefties the rest of the way. They could find their way in there. I think the Marlins as well have figured some stuff out with Pete Fairbanks and the guys supporting them, and also the Pirates, I think, are another one of those bullpens that could vault themselves in there if they had a little bit more depth. But they just need a third guy to go with that Gregory Soto, Mason Montgomery duo, because that duo is just electric.
Yeah, and they were hoping it was going to be Santana. It's not. Yeah, I don't know who it is. Yeah,
Evan Sisk.
Johan Ramirez.
Majinski.
Yeah, or Majinski. Yeah, I don't, whatever that. And yeah, I mean, Majinski should probably be that guy. Johan Ramirez shows glimpses of being an absolute stud reliever, and then gives up six runs the next game. So just more consistency from him could be up there. But I know there's that's the same with that, the Marlins too. It's just like consistency, and like the stuff is crazy from that bullpen, but just need a little bit more consistency there.
All right. Well, let's recap Rick's list. Number one, the Braves. Number two, the Padres. Number three, the Dodgers. Then we got a big gap. Then at four, the Phillies. Five, the Mariners. Six, the Guardians. Seven, the Mets. Eight, the Blue Jays. Nine, the Brewers. And tied for 10th, the Red Sox and Diamondbacks. And I got the honorable mention of the Baltimore Orioles.
This is a Brandon Montgomery just hit a walk-off home run off Raisel Iglesias in his debut. That's pretty cool.
That's sick. Yeah. That's crazy. All right. Yeah. Well, that knocks the Braves down to number two, right?
Yeah, I see Iglesias. No, that's because I featured him as the graphic this week. And that's just the graphic curse of the curse. Closer. Yeah, the closer list.
The curse. Dang.
Sorry about that, people.
Yeah, come on, Rick. All right. Well, that will do it for this episode number 164 of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and anything else you're working on?
You can find me on socials at I Am Rick Graham. Same old, daily articles with the streamer and roundup, and every Tuesday putting out the three lists, the holds, saves, and save plus holds lists. So yeah, same old, week for me each week.
Yeah. All right. You say same old, you could say save hold as well. Save hold. Yeah. All right. You can follow the podcast at In the Pen Pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I do the weekend editions of the SP Roundup. I do 4 days a week of the First Pitch podcast. I also do some playing time analysis for Baseball HQ. But that will do it for this episode 164 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.